you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to Kotaku Split Screen, the only podcast with more teraflops than any of the other podcasts. The world is falling apart, so let's talk about video games. Today we are talking about Kentucky Route Zero, Persona 5 Royal, and Ori and the Will of the Wisps. Then we dive into some recent PlayStation 5 news and talk about our strategies for coping with coronavirus and social isolation. Finally, some off-topic talk on The Wire, McMillions, and The Wrecking Crew, along with The Beach Boys and Brian Wilson. All right, here we go. And we are back for another episode. My name is Jason Shire, and I am joined once again by Kirk Hamilton.
You are. Hello. You're joined by me.
And Maddie Myers.
Yes, me as well. I'm also here.
All three of us.
The three of us are, as always, social distancing from one another by recording via
of
Skype.
Course.
In fact, we are social distancing so hard that we are all in three different states.
Yeah.
Trying to stay as far away as possible.
We decided to finally start being in three different states.
Right. It's a new thing. We're trying it out. We'll see how it goes.
So far, it's going well. There are a whole bunch of things to talk about. We will try to limit the amount of post-apocalyptic
content.
Pre-apocalyptic?
Yeah.
Mid-apocalyptic? Well,
mid-apocalyptic.
Yeah, mid-apocalyptic.
It's weird. I wonder if it was like this, if this is what it was like to live during the Great Depression, where like you know you're part of something cataclysmic.
Or like the bubonic plague or something. Like
I know that Twitter was a total mess during the bubonic plague.
Oh, yeah. True. Really
wild. People just kept tweeting like hoaxes, and they would get all these retweets.
Terrible.
They would be like, yeah, it was caused...
There's a lot of mask fashion opinions being bandied around.
Very true. It was a frustrating time.
it's wild times. And I bet if you went back and listened to like the past few weeks of Kotaku Split Screen episodes, you could see like the gradual deterioration and also how quickly everything moved from like, all right, this is a thing to like, oh
yeah,
my God.
Yeah, I'd like to shout out my past self dismissively telling you, Jason, that this wasn't a pandemic. That was something I remember saying.
Did you really say that?
Yes,
I don't remember
that.
Well, I think that it was not yet a pandemic. That was
well, it
was
wasn't
accurate.
Then, but Jason was right in that prediction. But it wasn't an official prediction, so who even cares?
Right.
Wow.
Not necessarily playing Final Fantasy VI just yet.
Yeah, yep. None of us predicted
a global pandemic. Why didn't we predict this?
I'll say that.
That would have been a good one.
We could have at the time. I think we first found out about the Wuhan market virus getting picked up there in like late December.
It wouldn't have been a gaming prediction. We could have predicted that it would impact gaming in some way. That would have been very prescient of us.
Yeah, that would have been a good prediction. But
you know, I feel like the moral of this is... think bigger next year.
Yeah, think bigger. Well, next year when we're making our predictions, there will be no more video games. So
from our bunkers,
it'll be a little more.
We'll all be playing with just wooden dice on sundials in the middle of fields.
Right, it's gonna be beautiful.
Yeah. So, gonna be great games, great gaming.
Before we get started, just a warning that there's a baby in my apartment, so if you hear if y'all hear screaming and crying, that is not me this time. It is my child.
If it is Jason, we'll let you know that he's doing that.
Shout out to all the people who are somehow working remotely, like with their spouses, and also taking care of kids, because it is impossible. And like I can't even imagine. Like, I feel like it's easier for me with a 5.5-month-old who can't walk than it would be for people with toddlers. Like, I can't understand how people are going to potentially do that for months. It just seems impossible to me. And who knows what's going to happen. Also, sorry in advance if I lose my voice because I feel something coming in my throat, and it's probably the virus.
You're going to be fine. You're going to be okay.
Fine.
Just maintain social distance.
I have this like lump lump in my throat. Is
just
that a
don't
sign?
Come over to either of our states and you'll be fine.
Right.
I'll do my best. All right, let's talk about some video games we're playing and try to distract ourselves from the world. Maddie, why don't you go first?
Okay, sure. Although the video game I'm playing is in no way a distraction from the world. I was going to play some more Persona 5 this week, but I actually have been losing it being inside for too long. So I've been going on a lot of walks and not playing that many video games. We'll see how long that lasts. But I did carve out some time to play episode 3 of Kentucky Route Zero. And I'll summarize this game again because I've been playing it in chunks and maybe this is your first time hearing about it. So this is an episodic game that came out several years ago. It's about the 2008 financial recession, among other things. It's sort of like a series of poetic vignettes about living in America during that time period, being a working class person, but it's also supernatural. And episode 3, I've been trying not to spoil this game, but it's kind of unspoilable anyway because it's so much like reading a poem that you just kind of experience it and let a spooky thing wash over you. And there's not a plot, really. There's sort of some broad strokes of a plot, but it's more just moodiness and you're experiencing the weirdness of living in this uncertain time. So that episode 3 and
that doesn't sound at all relevant to our current experience.
Yeah, I love living in an uncertain time. I guess I should also say that sometimes when I'm feeling very anxious, I'll sort of vacillate between wanting to escape from it and wanting to fully experience those feelings.
Yeah, I think that's normal.
And I think it's very normal. And I was feeling like I wanted to feel those feelings. And this game I actually really recommend for that. It's very beautifully written and intense and sad. But if you kind of want to go ahead and feel those feelings, I think Kentucky Route Zero is a beautiful way to do that. So episode 3, there are little vignettes between each episode as well. And the episodes themselves are like an hour to 3 hours, depending on what you do and how many people you want to talk to. And the vignette for episode 3, right before it, is like directly related to the episode. It's in a bar, and the bar is deeply in debt, and it's sort of been leveraging that debt against some type of force that you eventually realize is a supernatural force. And the game does this a lot. Like, it presents capitalism as this sort of specter that you have to fight against, but it's impossible. And I don't know. I really like the way the game presents it that way. It's really hitting the spot right now, I guess I'll put it that way. And so then the rest of episode 3 kind of gets into that, and you learn more about the bar and like the distillery where this mysterious supernatural whiskey is being produced, and just the idea of debt and being in debt and fighting it and never being able to get out. Anyway.
Is that the vignette that's a play?
No. Although the whole game is kind of play-like, so I guess.
Kind of on a stage.
But I wouldn't say it's a play. There's maybe that's the next one. I'll let you know next week what the next one is.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. The last thing I saw was a vignette where it's like you're watching a stage show and you turn around and there's the audience, and then you turn back around and it's at a bar.
Oh.
And it might be the same thing that you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking of the same thing. It's funny how we're all, this game is so dreamlike that I'm always like, I kind of remember this dream I had last night.
Yes.
Is that the one with the musical sequence where the singer on stage performs?
Yes.
That's incredible.
It's
that
so
part.
Great. Yeah, so that's in the actual episode where you go to the bar that's from the vignette, but it's later that same day.
I
you sort of
that
put it together that it's the same bar, and you're like, oh, okay, these are the same people, and then you like watch a musical performance at the bar. But yeah, I don't know, it's wild. It's a wild game.
That's one thing about this game is I feel like maybe in every episode, and I haven't finished it, so I haven't played every episode, but I feel like in every episode, there's at least one musical moment where a song plays or someone. I think it's in the first episode where just this singer, it's like this kind of folk song, like a bluegrass song with a man and a woman singing, and they kind of appear in the foreground and they just sing for a little while.
Yeah.
I feel like that game has really cool musical, they're not exactly needle drops, but they're kind of just these musical performances that will happen in the middle of the game.
Yeah, and that musical sequence, you can choose which lyrics the singer is going to sing. I didn't look it up see if you can actually change it, but I assume you can, because
I think you can.
You just select them and then the game knows to spin off that particular verse next, and presumably the song is different for or at least the lyrics are different for each person who plays the game and selects whatever they select. I don't know. I thought that was really cool because I just selected the lyrics and I was like, I guess I'm going to imagine what it's like if someone sings these lyrics that are definitely not going to be sung in this game. And then they like have a vocal track come in and she sings them. And I was like, what? So that was cool.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's so cool. I gotta finish that game. I gotta get back to it.
Yeah, it's pretty heavy to play right now, but it's also kind of amazing to play right now.
No, right.
At the same time.
I'm drawn to it for the same reason you're describing. I could use a little bit of that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting approach. I've been playing a game that is completely opposite and it's like a total escape from everything.
That's good too.
And I think I might be talking about this game for like the next 4 weeks on this show because...
Right. You know what? It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine.
I am just replaying Persona 5. I just finished the second dungeon. I didn't really think I was going to play this much, but I'm totally all in on this game once again.
There's nothing else to do, man. Right. It's a great time to check out Persona 5.
I'm so hooked once again on the rhythms of Persona 5. It's awesome. And I've started to really unpack a lot of the new stuff. I got some new of the confidants. One of them is this like school counselor, I guess he's a psychiatrist or school counselor. And he'll like give you advice and stuff. And every time you talk to him, he gives you new abilities and stuff like that. And then the other one is this lady, this redheaded chick named Kasumi, who is going to join your party later, I believe. And she's a gymnast. And yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff in there. A lot of like random new things that pop up, random new cutscenes and like activities and stuff like that. Maddie, you won't appreciate this as much as Kirk will, but like suddenly instead of a lot of stuff is just totally different. So like all the pop quizzes are different, all the tests are different, all the names are different.
Oh, that would have been like the one benefit of playing New Game Plus is I wouldn't have had to like surreptitiously Google things and then pretend I didn't. And I really actually knew that piece of Japanese history or whatever.
All the crosswords are different. They've changed everything. They basically like designed this for people who have played the first game and want to replay it.
That's so cool.
Because there's enough different stuff that it like, it feels fresh.
I wish it would let me play New Game Plus.
I know, I don't think there would be any way to do that because the personas are all totally different and balanced differently.
Yeah,
and they have traits now where each one has like a hereditary bonus and then you could pass those along when you're fusing personas. And so that just like adds a whole another wrinkle to it. And yeah, everything just feels very different, even as the game itself is still the same game.
Do you do a lot of persona fusing, Jason? Are you a persona fuser?
Yeah, but I do it based on like what abilities I want, which I think is the optimal way to play because you need as many different types of spells as possible.
Right.
Sounds kind of Fire Emblem-y the way you're describing it. Is that kind of how it works?
When you play more and you see like how, because basically if you want to be able to take down any enemy and make your dungeon crawling as seamless as possible, you need spells of every type, every elemental type. And since each of your party members basically only gets one type, like everyone has a theme, like An is fire and Ryuji is lightning, you're the only person who can actually switch personas.
Right.
So you need to be carrying the bulk of the load. Although there's some new stuff, like I said, and one of the new things is that now you can get accessories that give you spells. So like there's one accessory that gives you the Garu, the basic wind spell, and so you can
give that
to like to Ryuji, and then suddenly he can cast lightning and wind spells. So like I said, just like so much new stuff. I just got to this area of Tokyo that's brand new for this, and it's just like this giant district they built with a bunch of new shops and activities like darts pool and do you remember, Kirk, in the original game, how you could find all these dirty clothes and then you would have to take them to the laundromat
and wash them
and you get like a randomly generated piece of loot? So
yeah, like a crappy piece of armor that you'd
district, instead of just having to like waste a night at the laundromat and like waste a valuable activity slot cleaning them, you can actually go to this shop and you sell them all of your dirty clothes and they'll buy them for you and they'll give you like points for each one. And with those points, you can buy other cool stuff. Like I got this accessory that gives me like an auto evasion skill. So they have done some things to like fix a lot of the annoying parts of the first game, or like weaker parts of the first game. And yeah, man, I'm loving it. The vibe is so cool. Just finished the second dungeon, as I mentioned. Oh man. So they've even changed like the way bosses work. So do you remember Madarame in the original Persona 5, the second boss? So he was really, really annoying because he would come out as like these this big face with a few different pieces, and you had to kill them all at the same time, and he would keep using this like paint splash ability that would like make your characters super weak, and you then had to revive them, and you had to like waste all your healing spells and blah blah blah. It was super annoying. And then when you finally took down the face, the real Madarame would pop up and you could do some damage to him, but only for a couple turns, and then he'd turn back into the face. So now the face only appears once, and then Madarame comes up, and then he does a totally different thing. I won't spoil it in case people want to be surprised, but like it's very different. And so they've really changed a lot in this game.
Yeah, if memory serves, that was probably the most significant difficulty spike in the game. I think you and I both were texting being like, oh, what the fuck? And like we had to figure it out because it was so hard. You're kind of early on, and I remember just hitting a wall there. So it tracks that they would have probably looked at player data and been like, 60% of the deaths in this game happen at this boss, like the second boss. So maybe we should think about changing it.
Yep.
That's funny.
Other stuff. So like the party member Haru, who pops up much later in the game, just kind of randomly. Now she's introduced way earlier, so like I've already seen her.
That's good. She's a random character.
Apparently, and I haven't even seen like a fraction of the new stuff. There's a whole new palace, a whole new semester of school. They've like significantly modified the Goro Akechi storyline and like his confidant path. And because that was kind of like abruptly handled in the original game.
Yeah, the whole second half is kind of jumbled. Feels like they ran out of time. So it tracks that they would take the time to make it better.
Yes. And so even though I mentioned a couple weeks ago that the dialogue has felt kind of strange, I was actually looking online because some people have been posting like screen caps of the original versus Royal, and there's so much stuff that has been improved. So it's gotten to the point where it's like, if I was playing the original game, it would be way more noticeable, I think. So even though I'm noticing some clunkiness, it's all been revised. A lot of it has been revised for the better.
Nice.
So
nice.
Yeah, man, I'm very, very into Persona 5 Royal. I'm still not sure, and this might, my opinion might change. I'm still not sure. My opinion might change later, but I'm still not sure if I would recommend it. Recommend that someone who's already played the first game to dish out $60 for what feels like an enhanced remake version, but it's really, really growing on me. It's really, really good, and I'm really pleased with all of the new stuff. And there's just a lot of cool tweaks and enhancements that they've made to the game. So, and also, if not all of our listeners are probably stuck inside for the next whoever knows, like who God only knows how many more months we're gonna be trapped.
God only knows, you say. God
only knows. I'm thinking of it in terms of months, but we'll talk about that more a little bit later. Persona 5 is like a very good escapist, like I just need to shut myself out from the world. Just jump into
this. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Game, so that's one reason to get Royal, even if you've already played the original. That is it for me. Kirk, what are you playing?
Well, I've played a couple of board game things, or one that was a video game version of a board game. I will talk about that when we talk about coronavirus coping strategies and techniques in the middle segment. So two video games that I've been playing. First of all, let's see. So I've been playing Ori and the Will of the Wisp and Black Mesa.
I'm going to hear all about Ori.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll start with Black Mesa because that's shorter. I'm almost to the end of that game. It's fantastic. I continue to think it's amazing. To break it down for anyone who didn't hear when I talked about it before, this is a remake, a sort of large crew of people, a lot of volunteers who then eventually got permission from Valve to remake Half-Life 1. They started in 2005. They've been working on it this whole time. They shipped an early access version of it in like 2016 or 17, around there, that had most of the game. And then they hadn't finished the alien world that you go to at the end of Half-Life. That's called Xen, X-E-N. And so they spent the last like 3 or 4 years just working on that. Now they finished Xen. That was updated. The game was released as a 1.0 version a couple weeks ago. And I've been playing it from the beginning. It's so good. It continues to sort of reimagine things from Half-Life and redo some stuff. It adds, you know, some Half-Life 2 elements. It's a great game. It's so relentless. It's linear in the way that Half-Life is and the way that Half-Life 2 is. it feels like a throwback in a lot of ways that I really value. I'm trying to think of what they all are. The way health works. So there's no regenerating health in this game, which now actually, I think a lot of games don't do that as much anymore, right? Like there was that whole period of time where every game had regenerating health.
Yeah, Gears of War does. I feel like it, some Borderlands kind of does. There's those shields that regenerate. So it feels a lot like that.
Destiny
on the
does.
Game, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah,
loot shooters,
I guess I'm thinking. Yeah, loot shooters definitely do. I'm thinking about like, because Gears was kind of the vanguard of this in 2006 or whatever, where suddenly regenerating cover, where you had to take, or regenerating health, you had to take cover, and your health would regen. And then I remember like Resistance 3 came out, and everyone was like, whoa, in this game, you have to get health kits to regen health in the middle of a fight. You don't just get your health back. And that's such a, that feels like a revelation, even though it's how games used to work. Mm-hmm. And Resistance 3 is also kind of described as being pretty Half-Life-y in a lot of ways. And so anyways, playing this, it doesn't feel as much of a throwback anymore because there are plenty of modern games that use health in that way. But that's one thing. It also just, it just goes forward and forward and forward and forward. You're always going past loading screens. There's a lot of like really abrupt loading screens, just like in the original Half-Life. And then you're just, boom, in a new section. And each section is kind of just a small little set that you work your way through. And maybe it's a big fight. Maybe it's a puzzle. You have to figure out a bunch of rooms. You have to open a door. There's a lot of underground, like sewer level stuff, that if it weren't so relentlessly paced and if it weren't Half-Life, you know, it just feels old-fashioned, like a, you know, a late 90s game would just have has a lot more sections where you're just in some kind of sewer and there's a big water, spinning water wheels, and you just have to go through a bunch of rooms that kind of look the same. And there did come a point where I was like, okay, I was just kind of running through it like, this is, I want to get to the cool shit, the part where you're outside fighting soldiers and helicopters, and then like the part where you go to the alien world. So anyway, it's amazing though. It's good even if you haven't played Half-Life. A lot of people have asked me, should I play this if I never played Half-Life? And I would say, sure, yeah, to play this. It feels more modern. I mean, Half-Life is still fun, but this, I think, holds up a little better. And it's basically the game. It just changes some things. But I got to Zen the other day, and holy crap, Zen is ridiculous. Did you guys see? I tweeted some screenshots of it. They have, like, it's totally blown out. It's completely different. They've redesigned it. They've added a bunch. It's pretty long. It's taken me a few hours, and I'm still going through it. And it looks beautiful. Like, it looks like Pandora from friggin' Avatar. Like, it's, like, all done up and really modern looking. Like, they clearly spent a ton of time, and I'm guessing they had more money because they were selling the game in early access at this point. It just has it looks so much more polished. It's so beautiful looking and cool. It's remarkable. I'd say that if anybody has this game, which I know a lot of people have bought it at various points, and were like, oh yeah, I meant to play through it. Even if you can just start right at Zen. Just go play starting right at Zen. If you've ever played Half-Life and you want to see the most amazing version of what was kind of a weird final chapter for Half-Life, I recommend it. It's incredible. Like, the people who worked on this are pretty amazing. Like, this collective, the Crowbar collective of people who worked on it, I'm very impressed. It's really cool. It's quite an accomplishment. And yeah, it's good.
So you can just start it at any chapter that you want to when you buy it?
I believe you can, yes. I think it just gives you the option. Yeah, I think I'm assuming that's because a lot of people have played
Half-Life.
Half-Life
1, yeah.
Right. I don't need to do this.
They just
want to
check out each level and then leave. But yeah, still pretty cool.
So I really want to hear about Ori.
Okay, well, that's what I'm going to talk about.
Ori.
So, Ori and the Will of the Wisp, this is a Metroidvania. Wait, Maddie, am I allowed to use that word? I can't remember. Is
you
that word
can.
Permitted?
I'll allow it.
Okay, you'll allow it.
I feel like it's good shorthand. Why wouldn't it be?
It is. But it's
a controversial
it's kind of
term. Are these games truly anything like Metroid, or are they just disrespecting Samus as a person and also her legacy? Who's to say, really? Anyway, this game is a Metroidvania.
Are we reducing Metroid to purely its design aspects? So, it's a game with an open map that's 2D, and you climb around and you get upgrades and, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's a Hollow Knight. It's a Hollow Knightvania. It's great. This is made by, I believe, Moon Studios is the name of the studio. It's a sequel to Ori and the Blind Forest. It's released as a Microsoft deal. I believe they own Moon Studio. Is that right? Or
no?
I don't know. Whatever. They don't. It's just
They fund this game. Yep.
They publish it.
Moon Studios is fun fact. It's an entirely remote studio, and I think there are like 80 of them. I just saw a great article about it. I think it was on gamesindustry.biz. So I guess coronavirus is not affecting
them.
Their work style.
Yeah, I just saw a headline about that and thought that was pretty cool. Okay, so it's published by Microsoft. So this game is on Xbox and it's on PC. It's on Steam as well as the Microsoft Store. I'm playing on PC. It's really great. It's really beautiful. It's really fun. And I really like it. So that's... That's it, Jason. That's what I think. I have some more specific thoughts. So wait,
the other day, you were saying it's extremely Hollow Knight inspired, which got me really excited.
I've also heard it's very hard, and those two things do go together.
It is challenging. So it is important to say what I really said was this game has big Hollow Knight energy. Right. I did not use the word inspired because... There's, you know, some question as to whether this game
There's
was
some
actually
controversy.
Inspired by Hollow Knight.
Yeah.
Regardless of all of that, who cares?
To contextualize here, the director of the game has been posting on Resetter that it's not, in fact, inspired by Hollow Knight, and he wasn't actually a big fan of Hollow Knight. Yeah, but go on.
Yeah, or that he had some gripes with it, which is like, and all of that is fair. I could actually imagine being sort of frustrated if everyone's like, it's just like Hollow Knight, and you're like, I mean, Hollow Knight is just like Metroid. All these games,
it's like,
you know, it's just like Castlevania.
All the Metroidvanias now have to fight in a ring until only one of them remains. And weirdly, it's going to be Metroid. Anyway, continue.
Okay? Yeah, surprise, surprise. Samus is going to blow everybody up with her missiles. I love to contextualize this. Anyone listening to this knows that I love Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight's like one of my favorite video games I've ever played. This game does feel like it in some mechanical ways that I like. It also doesn't feel like it in some ways that I prefer Hollow Knight over Ori. Like, as much as this game is cool and is its own thing, Hollow Knight is magic in a lot of ways, but I'm not going to do a big comparison. They're both great. And if you liked Hollow Knight, you'll like this game. I mean, it's like, it's a great side-scrolling exploration combat game. So similarities. First of all, you get a sword is the first weapon that Ori gets in this game, which is a change from Ori and the Blind Forest, where your first weapon was just this kind of...
Yeah, like an orb throwing thing.
Yeah,
it
was like a thing that
like it zapped.
A zapper.
A
it was
bug
like
zapper.
That thing you would. There's a thing you would get in Destiny, the like little ball that would follow you around in like certain warlock wells and then shoot at things sort of unsatisfyingly. I can't remember what it's called. It kind of was like that. And it was never great. It never felt great. Where like, I want to hit things with a sword. And this game, it's like, okay, fine. You want a sword? Here's a friggin' awesome sword. It's this sword with like super crazy reach that lets you do, you know, all kinds of cool moves. You can pogo on guys. The pogo doesn't quite work the same way. So it gives you a sword and that's great. A big breakthrough for me playing this game was getting off the D-pad and beginning to play it with the thumbstick, which I think might sound weird to people who play a lot of 2D games.
That does sound weird.
Only because, so playing Hollow Knight, I got so used to the D-pad. I got really good at the D-pad and, it doesn't really work in this game. And it wasn't until, so you get an ability. I'm going to try to describe this because this is what makes this game really work. This game sings when this ability is like in play. And that's so Ori's a little forest spirit. He's a little like glowing creature and he bounces all around. It's very bouncy. The way that this game moves is much more fluid. A lot of like curved surfaces and, you know, it's not the kind of like round hard edges, like right corners that you would imagine in a game like Hollow Knight. It's much more smooth and rolling. And the way that you move is you can jump, you get a double jump. The double jump is like the second thing that you unlock. I know some people
that's
appreciate
exciting.
That. You get it like right away and then you get the dash right away. You get upgrades very quickly in this game. It's not parsimonious with them. So you get an ability that's called Bash, which is a confusing name. But the Bash ability lets you basically, if a thing is near you, an enemy or an enemy projectile, and you press the Bash button, time freezes for a second, and you get the ability to direct yourself off of that projectile or enemy. So say a monster shoots a glob of slime at you. You jump in the air at the slime, press the Bash button, it's a shoulder button, and time freezes, and you get an arrow that appears off the slime.
Yeah, the first game had this.
Okay, this was in the first game too. I thought it was, but I couldn't fully remember.
Yeah.
So all right, I'm still gonna explain what it is. So you press the arrow and then you release, and instead of it doing damage to you, you pogo off of it and redirect it in the other direction. You can also use this as a counter against melee enemies. Like an enemy will jump at you, and if it's about to hit you and you press the button at the right time, you can then jump off of it and it won't hit you. You also get this kind of like a grapple ability that lets you grab things that are farther away with the other shoulder button. So pretty soon, as you're fighting, you're like bouncing off of guys and then jumping. And if you're really good at it, you can do these amazing aerial sequences where you're sort of redirecting off of all kinds of things in the air really fluidly in a very, very cool way that feels incredible. And then a lot of the platforming sections are also designed around this combination of the grapple, the bash, and like, you know, your dash moves. It is really great. I mean, the feeling of movement in this game is incredible. However, here's my criticism so far, and I'm like maybe 4 or 5 hours in. This is slightly Hollow Knight related, but it's only just sort of tangentially Hollow Knight related. I think this game is too pretty. I think it is too amazing looking. Because it makes it harder to play. So you've both seen videos of this game, right? What it looks like.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful. I mean, it's like eye-poppingly beautiful on a PC, like running at, you know, high frame rate and like high resolution. It's just crazy. I bet in HDR, this game looks so good. I mean, the lighting effects, and it's just like a ton of, you know, ori kind of glows, and it's this sort of like evening in the woods as like this moonlight comes through and like goes through the leaves, and there's shadows and light, and like fire is bouncing off of things, and there's particle effects coming off of every magical object, and it's incredible. Like, you look at it and like, there's this thing, I tweeted a video of this, where you jump through a waterfall, and it's all very small because it's a 2D platformer. But if I zoom the video in, and it's just like this little guy like passing through this beautiful waterfall as like water just perfectly like spirals off of him as he goes through it. It's crazy looking. The animations are amazing. The thing is, it's got a lot going on visually, and there are times where I'm in fights, and like Ori glows, he has like a kind of a glow around him, and then he's doing attacks that cause like big kind of beautiful explosions. The enemy might be this huge wolf or something with these glowing fangs, and there's fire happening and all these effects, and I lose track of the character. Like, I can't scan it all at once, and I like get hit a lot. Like, I'm just not that good. Like, I don't feel like I'm able to master it. And so it could be this is something I'll get better at as I get better at the game. There are totally fights I have with smaller enemies where I feel like I've mastered it. But there are definitely times, especially against bigger bosses, where I'm like, I just wish this was easier to read. Like, I appreciate all of these beautiful visuals and particle effects, but like, I don't need them all. I'd way rather just distill the combat to like a sword and a thing attacking me and like a guy, and that
a nail does... and some insects.
Right. So that does make me think of Hollow Knight, and one of the things I value about Hollow Knight is how clear it is. It's just like very simple.
Minimalist.
But as a result, right, minimalist, and the combat is so intense. Yeah. But there really isn't a strong comparison. I mean, Hollow Knight is a Souls-like. You lose progress if you die. The combat is so much more just methodical in Hollow Knight versus this, which is way more arcadey. You die a lot. I die a lot more in this game, but there's no penalty. You just kind of restart at a checkpoint. So it's just a totally different structure for exploration. It's a very different game, and it's very, very good. I want to say that complaint is like a thing that keeps coming up in my mind, but it's wonderful. The people who made it should be very proud. It is beautiful, and I recommend it. So
cool.
That's I'll keep playing it. And hopefully finish it.
So Ori and the Will of the Wisps, that is on Xbox and PC.
Xbox and PC. And hopefully I'll finish it by Friday when all the other video games start coming out.
All of them. They're all coming out then.
There'll be a lot to talk about next week. Persona 5. Persona 5.
Persona 5. You can't forget that.
Let's take a break, and then we will talk about some news.
Hello, I'm Melissa Kirsch.
And I'm Alice Bradley.
And we're the hosts of Lifehackers podcast, The Upgrade. The Upgrade is a show about all of the ways you can improve your life.
That means how to be happier and healthier and more successful and more productive and just generally better in every way.
We talk about stuff like sex.
Very few people are like, please jackhammer me for another 45 minutes.
Psychedelics.
You don't just go on the diving board when you're 5 years old and jump in the deep end, because that would be traumatic.
And psychopaths.
Giving you exactly what you need or want without maybe you being aware that you want it.
You can find us wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. Kirk, Maddie, let's talk about some news, shall we?
Sure.
Yes.
So before we get to the globally crushing, life-changing, society-destroying news, let's talk about the PlayStation 5.
What? That's not going to destroy society and like completely alter all of our realities? I feel like you're really underestimating the PlayStation 5, Jason.
That's true. I mean, if Mark Cerny comes around and is just like, here, I need to take a picture of your your ear, then
I would love that.
That guy wants pictures of our ears. We got to talk about this.
He wants those ear pics.
Mark, if you're listening, you can have a picture of my ear anytime.
So this week, so for the first time ever, Sony did a lot, like a stream related to PS5 info, and their marketing strategy, as we've talked about before, has been very strange. So last year, they announced the PS5 through two Wired articles, and then they haven't said anything about it or like done any streams or events or game announcements or anything about it until this week, when they were like, this was supposed to be GDC week, so this is going to be a GDC talk where Mark Cerny talks to developers about the game and gets really nitty-gritty about the tech specs. And so what Sony did was they briefed Eurogamer, Digital Foundry, who are kind of the tech experts in this beat. They briefed them on the PS5 specs, and then they had Mark Cerny come out and talk for an hour in his ASMR soothing Mark Cerny voice about
so soft, so gentle, very granular
details that I don't think were particularly comprehensible to anyone without a technical background. So a lot of this whole thing has been inexplicable to me. First and foremost being that the fact that Sony hasn't done like a more fan-facing thing, and that they thought it would be a good idea to have this GDC talk before any sort of fan-facing thing. Because what happens is fans were like rabid. They were in a fury, just like demanding PS5 news, like so hyped for PS5 news. And so even though like Sony made it clear that this is a tech-focused thing, and it was supposed to be during GDC week, fans just want anything. They're so hungry for any details on the PS5 news that like this thing came out and was just destined to be disappointing for people. So
it's
that's
kind of great though, because it's like this highly technical talk that was never designed to be the like bombastic showcase of PS5 features that people would love to be watching that right now. They're all like racked with anxiety about this virus and looking for a distraction in the form of like video game news, and they want their like blasting techno beats introducing them to like a series of drilled down PS5 features, and instead it's like just this soft-spoken Mark Cerny talking for literally an hour about how the human ear canal works and that relates to 3D audio, which the PS5 will offer. Like, by the time he got to the explanation of the human ear canal, I was like laughing out loud alone in my home, just being like, I'm losing my mind. I don't know what's happening right now.
It was insanity.
This is not anything to do with the PlayStation 5, but thousands of people are watching it anyway.
Hundreds of thousands of people. I believe that's what the YouTube views count was. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I loved that the video had an audience superimposed on it. Like he was standing in front of
silhouettes.
But there was no audience because everyone is social distancing and we are not getting in large groups. So it was like silhouettes of people like Mystery Science Theater 3000.
But they would move occasionally. So like, were they real or not?
Oh, I didn't see that. I only watched a couple clips.
Are you sure they were moving? They looked like fake silhouettes to me.
They moved. Guys, I watched it. They occasionally moved slightly.
Are you sure the ears weren't just blowing your mind so much that you started seeing things?
It's entirely
possible. You're hallucinating halfway through.
It's entirely possible that I was like, those are real people. They're moving. This is real. But also, why would they be real? Because social distancing rules state that they shouldn't be. There shouldn't be an audience there.
The key is it was Crow and it was the gumball machine. And it was so there were two robots and one human. Uh-huh. So that's a safe gathering.
Even if they were real, they were very clearly superimposed because there was nobody sitting there like actually
I figured
watching.
It was like stock footage that they had somehow superimposed of like an audience.
Right. I don't know.
It was amazing.
Strange. And like some of the slides he was showing were just like, I'm sure to engineers, they were all very impressive. But like to the average fan who was watching,
it's like literal math equations about how various speeds work.
So when I was at Kotaku in, I guess, 2013, the beginning of 2013, this takes me back because the same
PS4
thing
reveal.
Kind of happened for the PS4. And I don't know about the reveal. I mean, I remember the PS4 reveal was kind of, they did that event and then they were like, and here it is. And it was just this box and everyone was making fun of it. Some of this, to me, general thought is like,
I think you're confused. They didn't have a box at the PS4 reveal event. That's what people were making fun of, that they announced
it without
a box.
Yeah. But then they eventually revealed it and it was like, oh, okay.
Well, it's
actually
a box.
No, because people were kind of into it. It was like, but it has diagonal lines. It's kind of cool. Like it's a.
Not just any box. It's got diagonal lines on it.
Right. So that's not even really what I'm thinking of, though. I'm thinking of, like, I was sent to, this is when I was still in the Bay Area, and I went to a Sony event about the PS4, and I also went to the GDC talk that I believe Cerny gave in 2013. And both of those events, it was very much like, this is going to be the first real info we get on the PlayStation 4. And especially then, it was like, holy shit, PlayStation 4, there hasn't been a new PlayStation in 100 years. Like, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
And so I went, and I remember being there with my laptop, and Stephen Totello is like, you know, in whatever campfire pre-Slack thing we were using back
Hip
then.
Chat.
And yeah, and he's like, you know, what's the news? What do you got? And I'm like, all right, I'm fired up. Been at Kotaku a couple of years. I'm going to get a big story. It's going to be PS4 info. And then the talk was just like floating point computation. Like, it was all this. I was like, oh, this is just a real GDC technical talk. This is just not. I'm kind of mixing the event. There was a press event that was sort of similar.
Just to refresh your memory. So what happened with the PS4 is what people expected to happen with this was that the first event was in February. It was in New York City. That was the one where they announced Destiny. It was the one where they announced Deep Down, which never came out. It was the one where David Cage came out. Or not David Cage. His name is Fox something Fox. David Fox. His name is totally slipping my mind right now. Hold on.
Fox Mulder. I think the name you're looking for is Fox Mulder. Rick Fox? Was it Rick Fox, Jason?
Guy Fox?
Yeah, was it Guy Fox?
Was it a guy in a Guy Fox mask?
Was it the guy who sings the What Does the Fox Say song?
Like an angel in disguise.
Oh, wow. Callback.
Was it a personification of 20th century Fox?
Was it Robin Hood? But the Fox version.
Yeah, was it the slightly sexy, the sexy Fox from Disney's Robin Hood?
That was the one where Nate Fox came out and he was like basically Nate crying Fox, when he announced Infamous Second
Son.
Oh,
from Sucker Punch.
Yes. And so you remember that event. That was the one where like nobody knew what to do with their hands and we were making fun of like putting their hands in their pockets. So that was like a really good first event because it was all about games. And then they started getting more into the nitty gritty tech stuff with like what you were talking about after that event had already happened. So this is like the equivalent of that GDC talk you went to in the past happening before they had actually announced the console or games or anything like that. Like, that's what's crazy. Right. To this day, we still don't know what the PS5 games are. That's like nuts. Like, we don't know what's coming at launch.
I remember that when I was at this event, oh my God. Okay, I'm going to try to just remember some specifics. Jason, tell me if I'm right on this. Was this when they were going to delay Drive Club and you were getting me to like harangue the PR people about Drive Club because you were hearing things about Drive Club? Is that right? Can we talk about this on the show?
I don't remember that. I actually don't remember.
I think that was the same event.
Let's just get that rumor started. Totally unconfirmed. Who's to say if this happened or not?
Well, because then Drive Club eventually was like a disaster. Yeah, and was totally delayed. But at the time, so I was at this press event for the PS4 that was, I remember, underwhelming in general, and that their press was kind of weird, like all leading up to the PS4. It was very like, what is Sony exactly doing here? And I remember going up because Microsoft was much slicker. Like the Xbox One stuff was super slick, and
but
their
then
events
they had
were
that
like
whole
really
disc
happening.
Drive controversy, which I feel like super hurt them. And then everybody just went to PlayStation, even though PlayStation wasn't really doing well in marketing.
Well, okay, so I mean, there was. So let's get back to today for a second. So
this is fun though to rehash all of this. I appreciated bugging PR on your behalf, Jason. It was fun, and I wanted to tell listeners about that. But yes, you're right. Let's get back to the PS5.
I'll make you do it again sometime. I'll make you hit up Bethesda. Maybe you're not blacklisted.
Beautiful. Can you contact
So okay. So getting back to the current state of things. So the other really interesting thing that happened was because they released this giant list of tech specs that kind of most people, your average hardcore gamer who reads a lot of forums and Reddit and Twitter and stuff can kind of semi-parse this stuff or like looks at the numbers and just compares the numbers one-to-one.
Like,
and
so they can parse it just enough to have a super, super strong but not entirely informed opinion on
it. Yes, exactly.
We've all been
so
there.
The big number everybody's looking at is teraflops, which essentially is the maximum speed that a graphics card can run at. I believe it stands for floating operations per second or something like that. So everybody's now seeing this spec sheet and they see PS5, 10.2 teraflops, and Xbox Series X, 12 teraflops. And it's like, oh my God, the Xbox is more powerful than the PlayStation. But meanwhile, the people that I've been talking to over the past few months, over the past couple of years, who are actually working on the PlayStation, have pretty much unanimously all said, like, this thing is a beast. Like, this thing is one of those, the coolest pieces of hardware that we've ever seen before, we've ever used before. There are so many things here that are revolutionary. So many, like, behind the scenes tools and features, APIs, and all sorts of other stuff that is way beyond my scope of comprehension. This is why I'm a reporter and not an engineer. Mm-hmm. But the general consensus is that these things are both extremely powerful and both very similar in a lot of ways, and both do different things in really cool ways. These are both extremely impressive pieces of technology. But because of the way Sony has actually presented this thing and marketed this thing, now the narrative is the Xbox is way more powerful than the PlayStation. And I think that is such a fatal, like maybe fatal flaw on Sony's part for this console generation. And maybe it'll all be forgotten if like the PS5 comes in cheaper, or it has like a killer launch lineup, and it's a, maybe none of this will matter in November, very, very possible. But, or maybe these consoles won't even be able to come out in November. But like right now, it's just such a like dropping the ball after so many years of smart decisions on Sony's part.
Yeah, I wonder about that. Only because, yes, this is like a messaging thing right now. The real question for me will be when the consoles are out and there are multi-platform games on them and they begin doing the breakdown.
Which does
Because
better.
As yeah. much as like I generally do feel that the number of teraflops isn't a huge deal, if, you know, 12 versus 10, if you have great games on it, it's fine. It does, and I wrote about this at Kotaku at the time, back when the consoles launched. I remember kind of trying to articulate this as a very difficult needle to thread by saying that basically, yes, graphics aren't everything, but at the time, the PS4 had this just clear graphical advantage over the Xbox One, just on like, I remember it was Battlefield 4, I think, was out on both systems, and it was running at a steady 1080p on one and 900p on the other. Like, there were just these numerical ways you could say, okay, here's the same game running on both, and they could only get it running this well on the one and not on the other.
Well, so let me be clear. So what I'm hearing from the people who are actually working on these things, working on the metal, is that these two, like the Xbox is not significantly more powerful than the PlayStation, despite this teraflops number. And that the teraflops, like, it might be a useful measure of comparison in some ways, but ultimately it's a theoretical max speed. And there's so many things that could come between, like, the where you are trying to get and what you are actually able to do, to the point where, like, the GPU could have X number of flops that it can actually access, but if the developer isn't able to access all of that for whatever reason, then it doesn't even matter. And there's so many other, like, variables here that go into it. And so at the end of the day, that is fundamentally like the big question is, like, when Assassin's Creed Kingdom comes out, that's the code name, so whatever it's called, Assassin's Creed Vikings comes out this fall, presumably, corona aside, if presumably it comes out this fall on both Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5, which one will it look better on? Which one will have a better resolution, a better frame rate on? And I don't think we can know the answer to that question
Definitely not, no.
The spec sheet. And that's the point that I'm making. And so right now, yes. Sony is so dropping the ball so hard that in that they haven't talked about what games can actually do with this stuff. Because their SSD advantages are, it's just like the stuff I'm hearing from developers is very different than what I'm seeing in Sony's marketing strategy. And that is like mind boggling to me. Because I don't want to be like carrying Sony's water and be like, no, look at what this thing can actually do. But they're just failing so hard to convey that it's just frustrating to watch.
Do the developers think that the SSD does pose a lot of advantages? Because that is the bulk of what Mark Cerny talked about. He did talk about taking photos of people's ears, and that's very funny to me. But he also spent most of the time talking about the SSD and how it works, and I barely understand it, but the various ways that the way the PlayStation 5 is set up, it makes it so that games load faster is the shorthand version of all the different things he was saying, so that you don't have to like have a long elevator level or a super windy path that makes it so that two different areas can load. Those were the
RIP
comparisons
elevator levels.
That he used. So, like, do the developers say that that's true, or...
Yeah, so one important piece of context here is that both machines, both the Xbox and PlayStation, have a solid-state drive as opposed to the traditional hard drive that they've had in the past. So this is going to, like, the whole, like, super short loading times thing is going to affect all next-gen games. And cool. I think that itself is just going to make a huge difference. And it's important to be clear, like, the Xbox is a beast of a machine, and, like, that is going to do some incredible things. Both of these machines, I think, are going to do some incredible things. I'm looking at the notes that I took when I was talking to one person who's like a technically minded dude who works on this stuff. And this person was telling me that A, it's going to be hard to actually market this stuff because it's very hard to convey what makes a difference as we are now seeing with like Mark Cerny talking about it. But with the solid state drive, basically different solid state drives run at different speeds and have different I/O in and out streaming capabilities, which essentially means the amount of data that they can take in and out is varying. It's varying based on the speed of the SSD. And the speed of the PlayStation's SSD is significantly higher than the speed of the Xbox SSD. And I don't even think that's just going to affect loading times, because the way that this person was conveying it to me was that it can also affect the way games are designed, because if you're designing an open world, you no longer have to think about certain constraints that you had to think about in the past. Right. You no longer have to think about, like, I mean, the obvious example
is frustrum culling. I was going to say frustrum culling.
Well, the obvious example is, like, in Jedi Fallen Order, every single time you have to, like, crawl between a space and it's like, okay, it's loading the next area. Uh-huh. Like, even not having to think about that sort of thing. But I think it goes beyond that. And I think it's the type of thing where, like, developers have to get in front of this and start talking about, like, here's what we can actually do with this open world AAA massive game now that we're not constrained by the CPU and hard drive of the past. And I think that, like, ultimately the fact that people are fixating on these teraflops is doing us all an injustice, because there's so much more.
Let me just jump in here for a second. Don't you think that this is the kind of thing that people are going to talk about for a month? And then they're going to show more stuff, and then they're going to talk more about the console, and then the PlayStation 5 is going to come out.
I'm talking about what's happening right now. Yes, 100%. Yeah, like, but I think ultimately to go back to what we were talking about earlier, what we saw with the Xbox One was that the narrative you start with can make a huge difference. And fundamentally, what I think ultimately crushed the Xbox One at launch was that it was $100 more than the PS4. Like, ultimately, that was the difference.
But a big factor in combination with, you know, the always online shit that pissed everybody off.
That's what I'm talking about.
The fact that you couldn't own games.
So I think the messaging,
all this other stuff. I mean, the TV thing.
The messaging makes a big difference. Like, the way that you talk about this.
But that was a significantly bigger fuck up than just being like, the hard drive is fast, and we didn't explain that properly.
I'm not saying this is a big, huge, monumental fuck up. I'm saying that now, Sony has dropped the ball and has allowed all this time to, and there's going to be like weeks and weeks, if not months and months, especially with Corona, like, disrupting everything. Of people just talking about how the Xbox is the most powerful console and it's beating the PlayStation in every single way. And meanwhile, I'm getting texts and DMs even today as this was going on from developers being like, this is such a shame. Like the PS5 is like so superior in all these other ways that they're not actually able to message right now or can't talk about right now. I heard from at least three different people in the past couple of hours since the Cerny thing, being like, wow, that the PS5 is actually the more superior piece of hardware in a lot of different ways, despite what we're seeing in these paper spec sheets. And so, again, yes, plenty of room to talk about this, to keep for all these companies to keep messaging and showing games. But I do think that Sony has really dropped the ball so far. From what we've seen so far, it just seemed like a giant mess when it comes
to
talking about
this console.
They've
got so much time to turn it around, though. People are bored as hell, and they are going to keep being bored for the next several months.
That's true.
So if they want to do another live stream, they can. They can do it any day.
That's also true. They could pull up that fake audience and get up there and show us some games. Those people will cheer for anything.
The other part of this whole equation is that I think right now, as we speak, both Sony and Microsoft are having their war council meetings, probably on Zoom or whatever, on Skype, to talk about oh my God, what are we going to do? Like, yeah. What are our contingency plans? How many contingency plans do we have to make? Like, what are we going to, how is this going to impact everything? Because mm-hmm. there's a good chance that A, like supply is affected by the virus, and B, that the economy is so devastated by the time we get to fall that like nobody wants to even think about buying a console. So man, there's so many terrifying aspects of this whole thing. Not to mention, really, I think we could see short-term ramifications of the virus. Square Enix just announced a few minutes ago, an hour ago at this point while we're recording, that Final Fantasy VII Remake, while it's not delayed, it's still coming out on April 10th, it might not be able to get to all the stores, and like Amazon orders might not go through because of mm-hmm. supply chain issues. I would be shocked if like May, June, so on and so on, games, especially the big AAA games, aren't delayed. Like I think a lot we're gonna start seeing delay after delay after delay because of all this.
Yeah.
So which is a good segue for our next conversation topic, which is how are you guys coping, and how should we? I guess we could ask listeners if you want to talk, give us your stories and talk about how you're coping with coronavirus and like staying inside and what you guys are doing. Hit us up at splitscreen@kotaku.com. But also, I want to hear from you two, and I will talk a little bit about our own coping strategies. So, Maddie, you were talking before about how you've been going on a lot of hikes.
Yeah, I have been. Not near any other people, though.
No. Hikes are good for
yeah.
that.
My girlfriend and I did like a long Pokemon Go hike on Saturday, and it's been so long since we've done one of those, and it was like finally uh-huh. nice to do that. And so we got out and played a bunch of Pokemon Go and ran into...
You two are quarantined together, I assume?
Well, basically, yeah. I'm trying to limit social contact, but like within reason, man.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
And we actually ran into my old boss from the Boston Phoenix, who was out with like his stepkid also playing Pokemon Go. And we like awkwardly like stood 10 feet away from each other. And we were like, we're playing Pokemon Go. Like, hey, what's mm-hmm. up? And it was like very uncanny and bizarre. And yeah, I don't know. The world is a really strange place, but you can go for walks, I guess. That's a thing you can do.
What's it like being in Boston now? I guess you're not in the main city, in like the city itself, but like what's the atmosphere?
I feel like we're a little bit behind New York and some other places. Like we had a press conference today that I didn't watch, but my girlfriend gave me an update via text about it. And they said today that we aren't doing shelter in place here yet, and that we're going to try to provide some services to homeless people who live here and some other things that sound good to me. But like we're still in pretty early stages in Boston. I've just been going ahead and sheltering in place because it's very easy for me to do that. I've basically just been going between my girlfriend's apartment and my own, and that's it. And the grocery store, where I wash my hands immediately afterward. The only locations yeah. that exist are those ones I said, and that's it. But that's only because it's simple for me. And I feel like the other locations I go to, like the gym, are not a place that should be gone to at this time.
Well, I assume they're all closed at this point. At yeah. least in New York, all the gyms are closed. Yeah. Everything's closed in New York except for like the grocery stores.
Yeah, you guys are ahead of us. I think you have more cases than we do. And that'll mm-hmm. happen probably like in the next few days that Boston does a shelter in place as well. Perhaps yeah. even by the time this episode comes out, for all I know, that will have changed. Yeah.
Kirk, how is your coping been?
Fine for me personally. I feel like pretty fortunate only because it's not that different than my day-to-day life. Like I do everything from home. I record from home.
Yeah.
I don't have to make huge adjustments to my workflow. I already go on walks every morning up Mount Tabor, but like there's not a ton of people there and there's still not a ton of people there, so it's fine. So that's been good. I feel like, yeah, I do want to hear from listeners. I think maybe we can share some of your strategies next week if you write in and tell us how you're
yeah.
coping. I worry that everyone's gonna get so lonely. I think I'm pretty used to, you know, Emily and I both work from home, and I'm pretty used to just being around her, and we're here, and like, you know, that's a kind of our regular routine. But I think for a lot of people, they're sort of stuck
yeah.
alone, or they don't get to see their support networks or people that well. So
I feel like those are all the coping mechanisms I've come up with over like the past 10 years of my life of like being right, a working right. from home person. And like now these mm-hmm. are the coping mechanisms that other people are having to develop very suddenly, where like I do have a lot of internet friends, and like we do watch movies on Discord together, or mm-hmm. like whatever other ways that you can communicate with people who live far away from you. And people are learning about that now, and like playing games together online as opposed to mm-hmm. seeing each other in person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do want to do that. I want to watch a movie with people. So we have, I have a regular board game group that meets every Monday, but of course we couldn't meet, and then they closed the restaurant where we, or they temporarily closed the restaurant where we used to meet. So we got together on Discord and we played a game. The game is D&D Lords of Waterdeep, which is a board game that also has a video game incarnation. And we all just got it on Steam and played together, and it worked. It was actually pretty fun. I mean, we were all just at our, you know, there's technical issues, of course, and, you know, one guy has lag and then we're trying to deal with that and everyone has to log in. But once we got it working, it was kind of the same vibe. We're all just having a drink and playing this pretty fun board game together.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It was nice. And I saw, you know, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, they're making a digital version of Root, the tabletop game that I've talked so much about, which is really cool. And actually, like, my same group, we've been perfecting our Root game. We could totally just, once it comes out, assuming it comes out when this is still going on, we could totally play it together. And I think that we will. So that was nice. It was sort of like, oh, do we want to do this? This is just going to be a pain. And then we did it and it was actually really great. So I do advise that, or I recommend that. And I've been reaching out to a lot of people, just friends from school, people I haven't talked to in a little while, FaceTiming with more people. We've been talking to our neighbors more. We're neighbors with some older folks and some people who, you know, we're a little more worried about or just might not be seeing as many people, and just saying, hey, if you need anything, we can go pick up groceries for you and stuff.
Nice.
It feels good to offer help, like, I guess, offer to help people. So if you're feeling kind of useless or freaked out right now, I would advise just reach out to the people around you, like literally your next door neighbors. I mean, don't go over into their house or anything, but like if you have their number,
shout
text them
over
or something.
And, to them.
Yeah, shout over the fence or, you know, through the shower, or through the shared bathroom wall. Hey, are you okay over there? Knock on the wall or something. But yeah, that can be good. And the last thing is, Emily and I have also been trying to, like, we've been watching TV. I know a lot of people are watching TV, but we've also been trying to do other stuff to actually shake up our routine, even though our regular routine is just hanging out and doing stuff together. So we recently played Codenames Duet, which, have either of you played that? I know you've both played Codenames, but have you played Duet?
No.
No.
So this is by the maker of Codenames, which is a very, very fun competitive game. Codenames Duet is a cooperative version of Codenames that you can play with one other person, where you try to get one another to guess at the same time, and you have like a shared pool of guesses. And I won't get into the game because whatever, but it was really fun. And it was just nice to kind of, you know, not watch TV and like make dinner. And then after dinner, we like played a board game together, and that was really cool too. So That's
nice.
Have you guys started going into your quarantine supplies yet? Your grocery supplies that you stocked up on, your cans and stuff and pasta?
A little, not really. We've got a lot of stuff stockpiled. We're kind of preppers. We're borderline preppers to begin with.
That's smart. I mean, I guess you were proved right. You guys, notably, do not have children. And
so how's that
going? Our lives are very easy compared to
exactly.
Yours.
It's very easy for me.
Man, I can't even imagine what a paradise it would be like right now if I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I get to be at home all day without a child.
Yeah, it's bittersweet, but yeah.
I wouldn't say paradise, but it is less complicated.
It's just, I get a little like tingle of like, I don't know, it's not rage. It's, I guess, more like envy.
Jealousy.
Every time,
hatred. What's the word I'm looking for here?
Every time I see people talking about how like, oh, here's what to binge while you're all by yourself.
Right, right.
And I'm just like, oh my God. Okay, so I'm in a situation where, so my wife is an attorney and she works very hard, and I am a journalist and I try to work hard. And we are both doing our jobs remotely, which itself, I mean, the fact that we're able to bring in incomes remotely is itself like a small miracle. Oh, so we're extremely lucky about that. And I feel awful for people out there who just no longer have an income. Like, I can't
even
imagine.
So many people.
Yeah,
it's hard to think about.
And my wife and I have been talking about like ways we can try to help people. And I don't know if anyone knows if there's like a fund or like a charity for people who just lost their jobs. Like,
there's
doing
a
service.
Lot of them, but I haven't seen a good directory, but they're probably out there. There's a lot of funds though for individual industries and just blanket funds. Yeah.
So we were talking about how we want to like donate to that, and especially if we wind up like the government is talking about giving checks to everybody.
Yeah.
So like
I
if we get a check, we
away.
Would want to give it to like service workers and stuff like that. But anyway, and just hearing from stories from like people I know or like my family who just can't work anywhere, it's just horrible. So that in itself, we're super lucky. But like having a kid while you're trying to do your job all day is just like impossible. And we're gonna have to find some way to make it work. But we're on day three and it's already driving us both mad, and we're like not able to be productive, and it just I don't understand. And we're lucky in that our baby doesn't walk, and just I can't even imagine what it's like to have toddlers now,
like a three-year-old or a four-year-old.
My sister's kid is like just learning how to crawl now, and they were in the midst of trying to baby proof like as this was all happening, and now they're doing it really fast.
God, we're gonna have to do that soon too.
And my sister, my nieces are a little older than that, and they're having to homeschool their kids, and they're able to, you know, they're free and they're able.
So
and
what do they do? Is your sister just not working? She's just teaching them instead?
Yeah. And like they send out lesson plans and you kind of find the time to do it. And a lot of it is sort of directed with the kids. They go to a pretty nice school. So they have like there's like a tablet that they can send home with the kids, or you can get on an iPad and there's a way they can like deliver the course via video. But this is also like super ad hoc. And from what I gather, not sustainable. I mean, they're all throwing it together and faking it every day, but I'm sure the teachers are under a crazy load trying to make this happen.
Yeah.
So there's the teaching aspect of it with older kids, and I don't know how that works at all, especially long term.
Yes, it's all just madness. And
just a lost year. It's just a really weird lost year.
Every day you read an article and it's just like, yeah, prepare for this to be months because like what else? The only thing we can do is just wait for a vaccine, right? Or like wait for it to die down or hope treatment. That social distancing works. And man, it's all terrifying. And what's really infuriating is just like you always kind of knew that every single president is faced with some sort of crisis, but like the worst president that we've ever had in the history of our country combined with like one of the worst crises.
Some competition for that particular role.
I guess that's fair.
We don't need to get into superlatives, but the man is not up to the job. Let's just
who is the worst president? There's so many.
the dumbest president is that
he's
fair
not
to
up
say?
To the job. Doesn't need to be the ist of anything. This guy is not.
How
prepared.
About in our lifetimes? You know,
the dumbest president of our lifetimes facing the worst crisis of our lifetimes.
Sure,
and it's just this toxic combination that like what's really infuriating is to think that like if Trump had acted more decisively much sooner, things could have gone a lot differently and we might not be in the situation that we're in right now. And then what's even more frustrating is that his most loyal supporters are so brainwashed that like they don't even see that, and for all we know he could very well like win re-election this fall because we're
this is where we start. Anytime I trace like any thread of this and start thinking about what's going to happen,
yeah,
you go insane.
X. No, I run out of thread very quickly and then find myself in this despairing, terrifying place. Mm-hmm. And I almost don't want us to go there, or like want to spare listeners us despairing, because it's so like I'm so angry and freaked out about so many things, like including what you're saying and everything.
And it's like also an election year just in addition to it all.
I'll put a pin in that. Yeah. Okay, so to rewind a second, one day at a time, I think, is the best way to cope with this stuff. I think just thinking about this like one day at a time and just like day-to-day survival and like looking for moments of happiness
and helping your community
where
you can, which we've emphasized a lot, but I agree is super, super important to like be thinking about ways you can help. Even if you can't afford to, there might be some other things you can do, like buying groceries for people in your neighborhood or like, I don't know. Looking out.
Yeah, no, that does help.
Yeah, New York is weird because, so I was walking, I had to go pick something up for my wife this morning. And so I was walking through the streets and it almost doesn't feel like anything's happening because there's so many people on the streets. I think if I went on the subway, it would be different. The subways are probably pretty empty right now. And a lot of the restaurants have like signs hanging up that say takeout only, because in New York, all the restaurants have been banned from doing sit down. I don't know if that's the case where you guys are, but restaurants here, they are shut down except for delivery and takeout. And a lot of the other places are
Portland.
Just closed. They closed all the gyms. They closed a lot of the like non-essential places to just like stores and stuff. And it's weird. Like you pass by a Starbucks and all the seats and tables are just like stacked up. Like there's nobody's allowed to sit in them. But then you pass grocery stores and it's like elbow to elbow, like the opposite of social distancing, because grocery stores in New York City are just so crammed and narrow.
That's true.
That hasn't been my
experience here is that grocery stores are, there's people there, but it's not crazy and everyone's keeping their distance, or at least I had to go once. But you can also do curbside pickup. There's like ways that you can call and they'll do it, but it's like ordered way out. You have to order way in advance and kind of plan things out.
Yeah, New York is—it's impossible. Social distancing in New York are not a very good combo because everybody's always just crammed together, packed together,
right,
like sardines in the subway. Or my wife and I went to the park near our apartment on Saturday, and it was just packed full of people. And I mean, I guess it's okay, as you guys have been going for walks. I think it's okay, considered okay to go for a walk as long as you stay away from people.
Yeah.
But
it's harder in New York.
Yeah, it's hard.
The parks I'm going to, there aren't that many people. Like,
very difficult here. But yeah, I mean, we've been trying to get through it one day at a time. The kid stuff, I wonder how people out there are going to deal with this long term, because like 3 days in, I think a lot of people are already driving themselves insane or like going insane and might have to take like leave off work or something like that. Like, who knows? But yeah, if you guys out there want to share your stories of like how you're coping with all this, hit us up, splitscreen@kotaku.com, and we'll talk about a couple of them on the show next week, share some stories. Cool. Do you guys want to take another break and then get into some off-topic stuff?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Cool. And we are back. Kirk, Maddie, as we just said, it's binge-watching time. It's time to enjoy your shows. Are you guys doing anything? Anything you want to share that is worth talking about?
Definitely.
Sure. I can go first. So we've watched a lot of The Wire. we're really getting through The Wire. We'll probably be done with it in the next week at the rate we're going.
Nice.
But yeah, it's, you know, The Wire is a pretty depressing show, but it's actually all right right now. Like, the problems that The Wire is taking aim at are like the structural problems with police departments and so on and so forth. And I actually feel pretty emotionally distant from that type of critique right now, because I'm more thinking about much larger structural problems in society. So like, watching The Wire is almost quaint in some ways, because it's like, oh yeah, like neighborhoods and the specific issues of those neighborhoods also exist. And also, watching any piece of media where people are outside and going to a restaurant feels really weird right now anyway, because you're like, oh yeah, people were going to a restaurant.
Right. We used to do that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Well, so wild. My plans to watch The Wire have been shot.
Yeah.
My plans over the next few weeks.
You made a promise though. You made a promise. I'm going to hold you to it.
Well, I think you'll enjoy it when you get to it. I've said it before. I still recommend it if somebody is looking for something to watch a lot of. I think The Wire is still really great. Mm-hmm. So that's me. Mm. That's what I'm watching.
What about you, Jason?
I have been watching. So I finished McMillions, which is the documentary series on HBO that I talked about a couple weeks ago.
I watched the first episode of this, I should say, as you talk about it.
Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy
it? Yes.
So this is the HBO series. It's about the guy who, it's really about this giant chain of conspiracy to defraud McDonald's monopoly.
It's really about the funniest FBI agent who ever lived. Yeah, like, that's what it's really about.
So the first episode is mainly about that, but it expands over time. And there are what's amazing about this documentary is that there's so many colorful characters in it. Mm-hmm. And so this is all based on this Daily Beast article from 2018 about the guy who's at the center of the conspiracy. But that article does not even tell a fraction of the story that this documentary tells, and that article does not capture the characters and how good they are and how fascinating they are. So I very much recommend watching this documentary series, because it's like it's well done. There's some corniness to it, but it's overall it's just a very fun, very enjoyable, very entertaining, very fascinating story.
Yeah, I like the reenactments. Mm-hmm. Just that everything is
that's
being
the corniness
reacted
I
by
was
these,
talking about,
but it's
yeah.
kind of very winning. And also, I have not eaten McDonald's in forever. I don't like McDonald's anymore, but it kind of makes me want McDonald's. So like, I don't know. Like, they talk to people at McDonald's, and you know, who gave their sign off for this. But I will say that for a thing that's about how McDonald's kind of got scammed, there are just these scenes of the FBI agents, and they all go and buy a bunch of McDonald's to like play the Monopoly game, and I'm like, that'd be kind of a funny, kind of a fun detail, you know. I can just get
some
McDonald's.
Some fries.
Oh, we gotta eat some McDonald's for this. Oh well. A thing I'd forgotten that because I remember the Monopoly competitions when they were happening.
Uh-huh.
I had forgotten that you didn't need to buy anything to win. You would just like get them in. Like, there's the one guy who wins like gets one in a People magazine,
right?
Or you could even write in, because there's a. And isn't there like a rule that you can just write in and ask for a piece and they'll send you one, because it otherwise would be gambling?
Well,
or
a lot of them,
like
the
that.
Idea was to match them. So you would get one part. If you got like,
oh, yeah.
like Park Place, you would have to then go get Boardwalk elsewhere. So giving them out for free is a savvy marketing strategy, because you still had to go and get it elsewhere. Right.
I think there was also like a legal requirement, though, that they like had to.
Right. That's what they say in the documentary. Yeah. That otherwise it's considered, I guess, gambling or a lottery or something.
Right.
That it can't
but I had forgotten about that. That like a winner can just be like, oh, I won the McDonald's Monopoly game from like a People magazine. Like, I didn't even go buy fries or whatever.
But the story is so good. And so it's six episodes. It's all just very entertaining. And man, Kirk, so you the FBI agent is a fantastic, hilarious character.
What's his name?
I'm forgetting his name. He's Marshall incredible. Or something. He's great. But there are more characters who are just also as ridiculous, not as like hysterical, but just such like larger than life. It almost feels like they're all Phoenix Wright characters and what caricatures they are. Like they're literally, some of these people are just like, it's one of the most incredible parts of the story is that it takes place in Florida, which as we know is the state that is the most normal state.
The most normal state in America.
And so there's some characters in it. Man, just wait. There's some real characters.
I guess I appreciate that it's true crime, but it's not true crime where you're like, you know, constantly thinking about the murder of a high school girl or something.
No.
Like it's just a true crime where like it was this big caper and they robbed McDonald's. Like,
Ultimately, I mean, that's what's so there is some sad stuff
I'm not surprised.
A little bit later on. But like the crime itself, fundamentally the victim is this giant corporation.
It's McDonald's.
I guess you could also like who gives a fuck? And but also you could argue that the victims are people who think they can played
win.
The game,
yeah.
like expecting they would be able to win and couldn't. But yeah, no, it's fascinating. And the way that they keep you just like guessing at how it all happened until the last episode is also very clever and smart and fun.
Yeah, we'll definitely finish it.
Yes, you should. Let me know when you do because I'm very curious to hear your thoughts. What about you, Kirk?
Nice. Well, my off-topic pick is tied in with my music pick. So I'm just going to bundle them all together.
Okay,
It's going to be a synergy package deal. So strong songs this week. Is God Only Knows by the Beach Boys. Actually, by Brian Wilson and Tony Asher. My God, it's a good song. I knew that it was like a good song. I really have this vivid memory to tie this to video games. A few people have mentioned this to me on Twitter of when it plays in Bioshock Infinite. Because at the very beginning of Bioshock Infinite, there's this barbershop quartet that like floats up on a floating ship and then they sing this really beautiful rendition of it. And that song is kind of thematically tied into that game. The game is a mess in a lot of ways, but it is like, you know, kind of
that intro, though. Great. Great stuff.
Beautiful. And so that song has always kind of lodged in my head. Oh, yeah, that's a really good song. Then I learned it for making this episode. And it's like crazy good. Like, it's like a perfectly written song. It's like so good.
God only knows what I'd be without you.
Anyways. So that listen to that episode if you want to hear me lose my mind and try to explain why I like complicated bass lines are cool. But then while making that, I watched the movie that is my off-topic pick, which is called The Wrecking Crew. And this is a documentary from 2008 about this kind of loose collective of studio musicians in the 50s and 60s, known as The Wrecking Crew, who played on like every single record, just every hit record that came out of LA for this whole period of time. They were just working. They were like in the studio recording. They would make like five records a day. And it was just a bunch of different players, you know, bass player, guitar player, drummer, whatever, all played a bunch of different instruments. All men except one woman, Carol Kay, who is super cool, and she played bass, and it was just like a ton of dudes, but Carol Kay is in the documentary a lot. She's super rad. It's neat to get to see her talk. It's a great documentary about all of them and about that life and just sort of what it was like in this like total pressure cooker that they all loved because they just the idea of a studio musician to even exist at this point in time. And this was like where it was born. And now the LA session player is like a whole thing. But this was kind of where it was born. It's a really cool documentary. They're the band on Pet Sounds, which is the album that God Only Knows is on. They were kind of uncredited on a lot of stuff. I think they were uncredited initially, even on Pet Sounds. But it's really cool to just watch this documentary that really credits all of them and like goes into all the lines they played. Like Carol Kay goes through all the bass lines she played on so many songs that you know. I mean, she sits there with the bass being like, oh yeah, I remember this one. And then she like plays the bass line for whatever huge, you know, hit that you've heard in 1,000 movies and everywhere. So it's really good. It's on various streaming places and you can rent it. It's called The Wrecking Crew. And yeah, check that movie out. And then the music pick, which is by Brian Wilson and just Brian Wilson, who is of course, the genius composer of the many Beach Boys songs. This is from his album Smile from 2004, which is a really cool album that I listened to after listening to this. Highly recommend that as well. That guy is just like musically on a different plane of existence. And this song is kind of appropriate maybe for our given moment. It's called Cabin Essence. It goes a whole lot of places. I'll just like play a clip of it, but it's a really nice song by one of the great songwriting geniuses of all time. So here's a clip of Cabin Essence by Brian Wilson.
I wanna watch you windblown pacing, waves of wheat for your embracing, folks sing a song.
feeling that cabin essence right now. We got cabin essence. Oh, I see that Jason
has brought a special visitor.
A special visitor for his cabin essence.
Can you say something? Oh, she grabbed. Oh my God, she just grabbed the microphone. My baby has grabbed the microphone.
Grabbing the mic.
Has grabbed the microphone.
And I feel like that's on brand.
It is.
She definitely got the right genes.
No, she's not in the mood to say anything. She's just kind of drooling and
she's like, no,
I'm going to be very good
and not say a word.
Yeah.
She knows that so her father is podcasting.
Oh God.
She understands it. She understands its importance.
Okay. So on that note, I think we should say goodbye for this week. Kirk, Maddie, see you guys next week, assuming society hasn't collapsed by then.
Yay!
Yes, I think that can be our hang in there, both of you and all our listeners. Hang in there. Hope you're all doing okay.
Yes. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Yeah.
All right. Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye.
Kotaku Split Screen is the official podcast of Kotaku.com. It's produced by Maddie Myers, Kirk Hamilton, and me, Jason Schreier. Kirk edits and mixes the podcast and also wrote and performed our theme song and other music. You can find us on most popular podcast services, and we hope you'll leave us a review if you like what you hear. Find old episodes at kotaku.com/splitscreen and email us at splitscreen@kotaku.com.